The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, all accounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
I'm feeling very handsome.
You feel it? No, yeah, you're not feeling handsome?
No, I brushed my hair.
Are you looking good? Yeah.
Well, I got a haircut, so I went up.
You did? Oh, look at you.
Wow.
And I shaved.
And you shaved like an hour ago, but you got the 5 o'clock shadow going. So there, you got that
you
quick.
You look about 11.
Do you remember what it's like to grow facial hair, Arnie?
Wow, I still grow? What are you talking about? I shave every, like, 3 days. Monday, Wednesday, Friday or something. Monday, Thursday, Sunday.
That's every other day, not every 3 days.
I used to shave a lot more. It's a pain in the butt. If it's a stubble, I can't do it. I have such sensitive skin. It just leaves a rash. You know, I can't do that, for crying out loud. I've been busy today. I've been answering Brady's emails and text and stuff like that.
What are you hitting up about?
Well, I'm a man of the people. And, you know, when people email and tweet and text in, Brady doesn't answer, I answer for him. Like last night, Chris the Met fan wrote in.
Except I did respond to Chris the Met's fan. If you look at that, I had multiple texts with him.
Well, but not the last one, where he said, "You're the best, Brady, but sorry, Arnie is your boss." And I wrote back to him just now, "Arnie is the best boss in the world," which he replied, "He does give you a lot of time off." So, yeah, you see that? So we got that going.
I hope people know that you are not my boss.
I'm the boss of everybody. I'm like
not true either.
What's that guy's name? Seth Blatter or whatever his name is, the FIFA guy?
The fired FIFA guy. Yeah.
I'm the boss of everybody. Voila. You know, remember when he said that? That's me. I'm the boss of everybody.
He's like 10 feet closer to the water fountain here, or the water cooler, whatever. And he sees the intern. He says, "Get me some water."
I did say please.
Can't you walk the extra 10 feet?
No, I did say please. Did I not?
I guess. But my point is that, you know, you can. It's okay to get out of your chair, Arnie. You can do it.
I'm saving my energy for hoops tonight.
I do hope people know that you are not my boss.
I'm the boss of everybody.
I have two bosses in this building, and you are not one of them.
I'm the boss of your boss's boss.
Nope.
Yes, I have.
No,
you see, he doesn't know that. He doesn't understand that.
Nope.
I cause hell around here.
Arnie's only boss is Beth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time.
Is that correct?
Oh, she was screaming this morning.
Did you? You broke your shower.
No, I didn't break the shower. She was in the shower.
You broke the shower. Either.
She was in the shower. I was, of course, sound asleep.
As usual.
It is like, I don't know, 7:38
o'clock. Oh, yeah.
And I hear, "Oh, no! Arnie!" So I figured it had to be an emergency.
That does sound like her.
Because I've not seen her naked in like 10 years. It's been a decade.
Oh, no.
So I go running and I go, "This must be an emergency, huh? Wow." And she's
talking about TMI.
She is there and she can't turn the water off.
Why? It's
because she broke the handle. She broke the handle.
Is it still going?
So it spins like a clock now. It just
so
spins.
Half of Williston is now underwater.
And I don't know how to turn the water off. I have no idea. Not a clue.
Like in the actual condo.
Yeah. I have no idea. Well, I'm going to turn my neighbor's water off? What is that going to do?
So is your house now filling up?
No, but it was, well, it's in the shower, so it was draining, and it was just running and running and running, and we go, well, so what are we going to do?
So your water bill is extremely high now.
It'll probably be high this month. Yeah. And so I did the only thing I could do. I ran out barefoot in the street and started screaming for a plumber.
in a quiet residential street in Williston.
But you laugh, but because they're putting up more condos and townhomes, there's always a plumber on site somewhere.
True. Especially in Williston, where the construction never ends.
And I track down the guy, and I grab him by his throat and drag him over to the house.
Is that right?
No, actually, I call the company. I see where he works for, and I come up with some major cockamamie excuse. I said, "Get him over here now."
So, now you're just getting out of bed, so are you like running down the street in your underwear?
Yeah,
or what's
just
going?
Screaming like a madman.
So you're going to be too tired for hoops today because you ran down the street.
No, I'll be fine for hoops.
The only running he'll do today.
And the guy came in and, of course, he had to take the whole thing apart. And, it was horrible.
It's like a brand new house.
I know that. And we had to get an Allen wrench, and he had to find his Allen wrench. And you know what an Allen wrench is?
No, it's a wrench named Allen. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the little small.
Yeah, it's a little small. You ever seen that?
It's not really it's not really a wrench in the way that you think of it. It's more like an L-shaped tool.
It reminds me of that commercial where the kid's calling his dad and says, "Yes, Dad, I know what a lug nut wrench is," or something. And the guy goes, "Is this it?" I think he was shaking his head no, and he goes, maybe. You know, just has no idea what the hell it is.
So can we confirm that the water is now off in your house?
It's
not still pouring
out
of your
shower.
It's
not still pouring, but it did for like, I don't know, like 10 hours. No, not that long. It did for a good hour. It was just coming down, and I was trying to fix it, but I didn't have a clue what I was doing.
Barksdale is learning to swim as
we
speak.
I was taking like a Phillips head screwdriver and trying to like tighten it, but it needed an Allen wrench, and anything I was doing wasn't even working. I was just like spinning it in a circle. Like, it's not catching! It's not catching! And I'm getting soaked because the water's coming down hard, and I'm just sticking my hand in, and it's hitting my hand and getting my clothes all wet, and it's not working! Get help! Call 911! I want to call 911 right now!
I would have paid good money to be a fly on the wall in that bathroom.
Like 911 is going to... I said, you call 911, you tell the police we need somebody right now.
Did you seriously think about calling 911 because your shower wouldn't turn off?
I was about 5 seconds away from picking up the phone.
You're that guy.
You want me to get flooded in my house
tonight? You would have been on the news tonight.
What? Do people not call 911 when there's a flood?
What is the bill? That's all I care about. What was the bill?
Yeah, I tell them, we'll square that off later. I go, send me a bill. I go, just send me a bill. And they,
don't you know I'm Arnie Spanier?
And the funny part
billion
is,
listeners?
The funny part is, he goes, well, do they have your address and your information at the place of business? I go, oh, yeah, I'm sure they do.
Did he, I assume, like everyone said, you're Arnie Spanier?
Yeah, well, no, actually, he listened. He knew who I was, but I'm like, yeah, just send us the bill. I'm sure it's going to be, you know, quite high. No, he was actually very cool. He said, I'm only going to charge you for 1 hour. Even though he was there for like 10. No, he was there. He stopped the water from just flooding the place. I was pretty worried that I was never going to be turning off the water. And then he showed me how to turn off the water. So that's good to know from now on.
So you won't have to call 911 next time
it happens. No, I mean, he showed me. That doesn't mean I remembered. I still wouldn't know how to turn it off. But at least I went downstairs to look. At least I made the effort to go ahead and figure out how to turn it off. I don't remember.
I would have given to have been there.
Oh, it was my wife screaming. Like there was a snake in there or something like that. It was crazy. I knew I knew it was bad when she's screaming, again. And I knew it was going to break because it took like all my might just to shut it off a couple times, but I didn't say anything.
You don't have much might.
I know that, but I was like taking both hands. You're not supposed to take both hands. And have to go.
It's like you're trying to
look at the look on his face.
It's like you're trying to change a tire.
It was harder than that. And it's not supposed to be that tough to turn off a shower. And I didn't say anything. I waited for my wife to break it, and then just pin it on her. Come on, tell me you don't put back the empty milk bottle and blame it on somebody else. Come on now.
Your wife came in today blaming it on you because she said you shower 4 times a day, so you have a 4-to-1 usage ratio.
Only showered twice today.
I
had to shower in the morning because I got soaking wet.
Wondering what that smell was.
And then I had to shower again before I came into work.
And then you will shower before basketball.
No, I'm not going to shower before basketball. I will shower after basketball. So it'll be 3 showers today.
Why?
So,
I mean, I know eventually at some point we'll get to, sports talk and stuff, but this is fascinating to me.
Why I shower so much?
We've talked a little bit about it, but you don't seem to really, you're not giving us the full details. I've never met a human being.
I just like to be clean and fresh.
But what you can do that with one soapy shower and a little shampoo.
That's true.
Well,
but I mean, I was soaking wet
in
the morning,
matter,
and then I was kind of tired. I'm like, I'm going to take a shower before I go into work. So that's shower number two, and then I got a shower after I play basketball.
I don't think I've ever showered 3 times in a day once in my life. Have you?
Yes.
On the Town Fair Tire text line, how many times do you shower a day? 802-655-6672. I guarantee you there's people that shower more than 3 times a day.
You know—
I promise you.
Yeah, Arnie.
Yeah.
Really?
For you to say that you can't shave anymore because your skin is so sensitive.
Yes.
Maybe your skin wouldn't be so irritated if you weren't constantly chafing it with water all day.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Just for that, you're working the full show today. I'm back to being mean boss.
I'm just saying, maybe if you didn't chafe your skin.
What? See my face? It's stubble. I don't shave the stubble.
I'm saying you shower. Yeah. So much that all that water eventually irritates your skin, and then all the soap does too. It ends up all dry, and it ends up cracked. It's not good for you.
You know why I'm silky smooth skin when I shave?
Is that what you are? I don't know.
Oh, you've commented on that. You said, God, your
really?
Skin looks smooth.
How many beers was I in?
Oh, you're a lot, but that doesn't matter. So what? So what? You said, wow, you look good. I said, thank you, Rich. I appreciate that.
It had to have been a late night.
Maybe a dozen or two beers.
Yeah.
But that'd be that's 2 dozen beers is what I meant.
But I mean, now, okay, now how long are your showers?
Oh,
are these 5 minutes?
No, yeah, 3 to 5 minutes.
Boom, boom,
boom. Yeah, yeah, I'm not taking
long. That's not so bad.
All right, we got a lot to get to. Brady, what's coming up on the show today?
Well, reminder, we're broadcasting live on Friday from Farnham Ale and Lager in South Burlington. Come hang out with us. Max Sugar Shack will be there providing the food. It's pet-friendly, so great beer, great food, a great spot. Come out and hang out with a great show also from 4 till 6.
It's all great.
Arnie broke a shower. And coming up today on the show, the director of Tom vs. Time speaks. We'll get to that in 10 minutes. Jeff Shulman, Vermont Athletic Director, with a preview of what's coming next in Catamount Country. A facilities update we'll get to also at 4:35. Buster only at 5, the four-minute football fix. But first, I have to be honest with you. I stopped watching with 20 seconds left, and I missed this.
Down by 5.
Morris has to get it in. Quickly, he does. Bounce pass to Horford. Swing to Tatum. Tatum switches to the right hand. Stumbles in the paint. Kick out Morris. Steps to his right. Three in the air.
Oh!
Got it! He got it! Marcus Morris hit the three. And the Celtics have the lead with 1.2 to go.
I don't remember the last time I saw an athlete up by two with a chance to either go up three or win it and just missed two foul shots toward the end of the game like that. I mean, I'm sure that it's happened a bunch, but I just can't remember it like that.
It was classic Melo, standing there, two free
throws. Carmelo's a star. I mean, Hall of Famer, and you miss it like that. Well, borderline, at least Hall of Famer.
Oh, it was awful. That was a beautiful thing. I haven't let out a scream like that since the night before when the referee didn't call a penalty against Columbus.
I mean, you saw this weekend in the NCAA tournament where the Houston kid missed two free throws, and then Michigan comes down and hits the three.
I expect it from college.
Yeah. Yes, you're right.
But not from the NFL. I mean,
the NBA.
I mean, the NBA.
That's a gutsy win. I mean, I'm looking at this team, and it's like, who are these people? You know, like I said yesterday, it's the Maine Red Claws against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they somehow pulled it out.
Well, Horford was on the team. It's
not
the Maine Red Claws.
Yeah, he scored about 3 points.
Horford and Tatum was there, and he went 20-10,
yes.
Okay?
Brady, you gave a stat. This has happened twice now with the Celtics this year or not? Because I think when you're up by 5 or 6 – with less than 20 seconds left, you're like 99.9% chance of winning games. I remember talking about this earlier in the year when another team lost a 5 or 6 point lead at the end of the game. It's almost impossible to do that.
The Celtics trailed the Thunder by 5 with 16.8 seconds to play. Okay. Entering yesterday, teams were 0-884 this season when trailing by 5 or more in the final 20 seconds of a game.
That's a little more than 99%.
Teams were 0-884.
There must have been another scenario because it was one remarkable comeback we saw this year. But that's incredible. 0-884.
0-884.
That is just insane. You would think it'd be easier to come back. I mean, 5's not all that tough with 16 seconds left.
Well,
I mean, you get a three and a steal. That's
well,
not impossible.
Well, a steal, or what you really need is exactly what you got last night. You need people to miss free throws, and that's exactly
but
what happened.
But you can still get a steal. You're going to tell me in 884 games you didn't get one three-pointer, a steal, and another three-pointer? Nobody Reggie Miller'd the New York Knicks? I mean, once?
How about this one? This is even better for you. The Celtics trailed by 6 in the final 25 seconds of the game. Teams had lost 4,315 straight games when trailing by 6 or more in the final 25 seconds. The last time a team won under those conditions, January of 2014.
That I find that impossible.
4,315 straight games.
I find that impossible.
It is strange. I was shocked when I saw that
because
number.
Because 6 is not, again, impossible. That's just amazing. Yep. Where are all these comebacks in the NBA that we talk about? That's just crazy.
Half of them are from the Celtics. I mean, it's been such a ridiculous season. They either get behind by 20 or ahead by 20 almost every game and end up either barely winning or barely losing. That was unbelievable, though. I couldn't believe what a choke job that was by the Thunder.
It's the fourth time this year at home. The Celtics are 4-0 at home against the current top four teams in the Western Conference. They've overcome double digits in every one of those games. So, look, yeah, it's great. But you also don't want to get in the habit of getting down big, especially at home. I mean, the big takeaway was that Tatum played well. Remember, Tatum was great mid-October when the season started through December. Then he hurt his finger. He had the birth of his child. Maybe he was a little mentally out of it. Maybe hit that rookie wall. January, he was awful. And now he's starting to come back again. I mean, he had a 20-10 game yesterday. It was his first career 20-point, 10-rebound game, and the first by a Celtics rookie since 2013-14 when Kelly Olynyk did it. He stepped up in a big way yesterday. It was great.
It feels like all for nothing.
Well,
though.
I mean, for him, yeah, it does. I mean, we can get to that part of it, too.
Yeah.
But the last night, for one night, it sure was fun. But, I mean, Tatum, I think, is now in a position where, and it's the only good thing about all these injuries, where he realizes he has to carry the team offensively. He has to lead this team. Horford's never going to give you 27 and 14 every night or anything like that. That's not his game.
You know, it's totally dependent on the situation that these guys came into. Usually lottery picks go into garbage situations and their teams are bad, at least early on. Right. Tatum entered a situation where his team was good. He just happened to be a lottery pick given the trades the Celtics had made. The best plus minus by a rookie lottery pick in the last 20 years, it's not even close, is Tatum. The Celtics are plus 324 when Tatum is on the floor this season. The next best is plus 238. And again, it's dependent on the fact that Tatum's gone into a better situation than most rookie lottery picks go to.
When Larry Bird came into the Celtics, Rich, the year before, they were abysmal, were they not? Yes.
Yes.
They were horrible.
Yeah, and he was picked a year before
he was
eligible to
play.
Exactly. So.
Can you imagine doing that now?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's unheard of.
Yeah, they got good real fast, didn't they? Well, of course, that trade with Golden State didn't hurt to get Robert Parrish and the draft pick known as Kevin McHale.
With Kyrie out, does that change anything with Gordon?
With Hayward?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm just saying, if they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, I said, you know, he's fine to go. Why don't we just bring him back and try to get to the championship? Or just the hell with it?
Well, I think now, based on what we heard yesterday at the end of our show, it looks like Kyrie is going to be back this year. Now, he's going to have to manage pain. Maybe he'll have off-season surgery, but they've still said that rest is the thing that's going to get him better. They're not anticipating a second surgery, so I'm anticipating Kyrie Irving being ready to play here sooner rather than later.
The only way he comes back is if he goes to management and said, hey, we're in the Eastern Conference Finals. We're not going to win it unless he gets a little help. I got to come back. You know, let's do this. You've seen me practice every day for now a month or something.
Yeah, but are they going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals? I don't know. I'm just saying, they have out there right now?
Probably not. You're right.
When
probably
you got
not.
Rozier and Tatum.
I don't know, though. The East is so bad, though.
Yeah.
It's so bad. I don't know if you want to waste Gordon on that or if he get knock wood, if he gets hurt again, you're just going to – I mean, geez, can you imagine the backlash on that?
Yeah,
huh?
This is kind of an interesting scenario moving forward because conceivably this team could be 100% back and healthy, except for Tice. He's the one sure thing that's gone for the year. But imagine you get Hayward, you get Kyrie, and you get Smart all back, and Jaylen Brown all back rested, probably too rested in several cases, is obviously Hayward. And you get them all back just in time for the playoffs.
No, I'm off thinking that Hayward's going to be
there. Yeah, I've just brought that up.
Okay, but throw it out there.
I don't think they will because I thought if there was a chance he'd come back as Kyrie was going to be healthy, they were going to try to make a run at a championship and see how things developed. I think with Kyrie being iffy, I don't know.
For a two-month period, I was all in on believing that Hayward was going to be back. Now I can't let myself get to that point. I don't want to play the hypotheticals on it anymore because it just doesn't seem likely. He hasn't practiced yet. He's not even traveling with the team yet. I don't expect him to come in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2 months and be able to contribute. Look, we saw what happened with UVM. It took Anthony Lamb five games to get to the point where he was good again and comfortable again, and that was in the NIT. He didn't play all that well in any of the games leading up to the NIT. Gordon Hayward's not going to step out here with no practice for 6 months and all of a sudden carry this team to the finals. I'm not letting myself think that
Okay,
way.
Scratch his name off. Put the rest of those guys up there, well-rested, ready to go in time for the playoffs. Does this team have a shot?
Yes, they have a shot. And if that happens, then yes.
And they're not the only ones in trouble right now. If you've looked at Golden State's situation, I know their injuries are sort of day-to-day, but they're missing everything. They're missing Green. They're missing Durant. They're missing Steph Curry. I mean, that
Thompson.
Thompson. I mean, the big four are all out right now.
I was just going to just bring this up. Are you sure, even if we got Gordon back, that you really want that? Have you seen what Utah's done recently without him?
Yeah, they've been on a tear.
They won 20 or 22 at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people talking about them as a sleeper team. I don't know. They certainly got a lot better without him. Maybe he was one of the reasons that was holding them back. I'm just bringing that up.
But I mean, look
I'm just
at
saying.
The West. You talk about Utah. You talk about, I mean, how many games New Orleans is like 20-3 in their last whatever it is ever since DeMarcus Cousins went away, they started going on a tear. Portland, up until last night, had won 13 in a row. The Celtics have to deal with them on Friday.
They should have won last night.
So, I mean, that entire situation out West right now.
It's awesome.
I mean, if Golden State continues to be banged up, this could be fun.
Brady, what do we got coming up next? And I'm excited for this.
The director of Tom vs. Time spoke yesterday. What exactly did he have to say?
You're going
to
like this. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow. The local slant on all things sports.
We know that everybody's going to be gunning for us.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. You want to get it? Oh, by the way, I forgot who sent in us on the Town Fair Tire text line. When we asked, how many showers do you take a day? It was, first-time texter said just one shower a day, but it was a lady, Ellen, in Colchester, twice a day. So we're getting close to what I do at three times a day. All right, we're getting close.
That's somewhat normal.
That is, twice, I could understand that, once in the morning. And once, you know, sometimes when you get home from work or something.
Do you ever take four in a day?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I'll shower before I play basketball to warm up my bones a little bit. So I, you know, so I don't have to put like icy hot all over me.
So instead of standing still and doing nothing, you can stand still and do nothing.
Exactly.
Cleanly.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly on that. All right, Brady, tell us about this next story because I saw this on.
Brady, what are we doing?
No, I saw that we were just talking about this. I saw this on Colin and you saw it on with. Skip and Shannon, so tell us about that.
Yeah, over on Undisputed on FS1, the director of the Tom vs. Time series, Gotham Chopra.
That's his name, Gotham Chopra.
Is that Deepak's son, I think?
I don't know.
Deepak Chopra?
I don't know.
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay, so
I don't know who that is, but
so then it's Gotham Chopra.
Gotham Chopra. Well, I figure with names like that, I'm going to say yes. No, I know they are.
Okay.
Son. Go ahead.
Well, he spoke kind of just about the process of how Tom vs. Time was made, and they asked him specifically, how much was Tom Brady involved? Was he really, really controlling every scene that you put out?
Yeah, for sure. Like he, you know, and I would sort of tell him to, hey, look at this part, look at that part, because these are the areas I just want to make sure you're comfortable with. Certainly stuff, anything with the kids, with his wife, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, we're partners. This wasn't me trying to come in and sort of be an investigative reporter. Mm-hmm. So I knew, and I know the quote, Patriot way, I'm a fan. And so I knew in a way how to navigate that or the things I needed to be sensitive about. So.
He also said that Brady didn't review every single thing, especially during the season, but that he did get final approval from Brady before everything was put out.
So he watched like the 15-minute clip and said, add this or why didn't you put this in or something like that. I would have loved to see one on Belichick, but I don't think we're still going to get the full answer on that either. I think that's going to be very guarded. You know, like I said, I think he did a very good job. I know there was like a 5-person crew, and it got to where he was the only one with Tom. Like he'd be in the back seat of their car and stuff like that. How you cannot be influenced, though, if you're Tom and Giselle, and I know sometimes you forget about the cameras, but you have to be influenced a little bit when there's a guy in your back seat.
There, oh, absolutely. Know? And that's the thing about television we don't even think about. They create the illusion that this is all just happening for our pleasure. There's actually somebody filming, and that changes the way things come out when you know there's a camera in your face.
This is exactly what I expected from Tom vs. Time, and this is what we're starting to see from athletes more and more. Athletes trying to control their narrative and trying to keep the narrative away from us. That's what the Players Tribune is. That's where Richard Sherman goes yesterday and writes, how I feel about Seattle, so you don't have to speculate on it anymore. Baker Mayfield's putting out this documentary leading up to the draft. That's Baker Mayfield trying.
Some people think that's bad, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, I don't think it's that bad. But I do think Baker Mayfield's trying to control the narrative also.
Right.
The fact that he has to do that to try to change our opinion, that's where it's the problem. The fact that he's doing it is just him trying to get his message out the way he wants. This is all propaganda so these guys get their message out.
I was going to say, what you might not know about this documentary or whatever you want to call it, I don't know what it is, but this has been like 5 years in the making.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They suggested this like 5 years ago, and Tom just said, no, you know, politely declined. It's not the right time. And then out of the blue, he called them up and said, you know what, now's the right time, which goes to show you he knows he's obviously at the end of his career.
When I first saw this or even heard about it, then actually watched the first episode, I was absolutely shocked that it's even taking place. This just seems to go
in his house.
It just seems to be against everything Tom Brady represents. I've always thought he was pretty good with his Facebook page. He seemed like an average Joe, pictures with the kids, and I was always amazed what a normal person he seemed to be on his Facebook page. Other than that, his life has been completely off limits, his personal life. And I was shocked when he went in and did this.
Well, Chopra said that he reached out to him. They'd been friends for a while, and Chopra said that he's a diehard Patriot fan, so that's kind of how he got introduced to Brady. And he said kind of his sales pitch to Brady was, look, your kids are, they're getting older, but they're still young. Don't you want to kind of chronicle some of your journey so that at a point where they can appreciate it and they can watch this down the line. That's maybe one of the things that kind of cracked the armor of him saying no. The other thing was, and Chopra said it also, he knows that he's 40 years old, and he knows he's staring in the face of something that's never really been done before, and he wants to put that out there. I also think there's some of the side business that he's going to get into when he's done with football. He's trying to prove the TB12 method works, and he wants you to see that. I think that's part of this also.
What's amazing is, you know, when you said he reached out to Tom Brady, you don't just say, oh, I got his phone number here. Let me go. That's got to be like a month process or something like that. Is it not? You have to know somebody who knows his agent.
Well,
who,
they had become friends for.
No, I mean, well, but how? How do you, just go, hey, Tom, how you doing? I'm Gotham. Let's become best buddies. I mean, there's got to be an introduction or, you know, a party. I mean, you don't just, I go to parties. Yeah. I don't see Tom Brady hanging out
there.
No,
but I would bet that Deepak Chopra connection somehow.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I would assume that because Deepak Chopra is one of those positive living guys that Tom Brady probably really
likes.
Well,
that was my point.
With.
Do you think Guerrero had something to do with this? No, I mean,
I think
only from the TB12 method side of things that he wants to, you know, I think he wants to heighten our general awareness of that. The thing I found most fascinating is we usually do is hit the relationship with Jimmy Garoppolo, and Shannon Sharp said to Chopra, you know, basically, do you feel that Brady was threatened by Garoppolo? And this was Chopra's answer.
I think Tom likes Jimmy. He's happy for him now in the 49ers. But yeah, I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
Competitively, this is my job.
Yeah.
And until you take it away from me, you're not getting it until you earn it.
Well, I feel better if you're not here. So that way, you know, I want to fight, but if you're not here, I won't have to fight as hard.
Yeah. I mean, I also think Tom's a pretty unique case. I mean, you know, I'm biased, but this guy's sort of established himself. I don't think and he's so confident in his process, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, the way he's able to calibrate all these things. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he feels particularly threatened by anyone.
I don't believe that.
But he did, you know, I think he kind of conflicted his answer there because he said at the beginning, yeah, obviously, you know, as a athlete or as a, you know, taking my job, he felt, you know, you could feel a little bit threatened there. It reminded me of Magic, who was apologizing, who was it, to Isaiah? You know, even at the highest level, Magic Johnson went out of his way to leave Isaiah off the Olympic team. I mean, you're talking to Magic Johnson, and now you're talking to the best quarterback of all time, and even he feels a little bit threatened. Everybody feels threatened at one point, no matter how good you are, Rich.
Were you surprised how much the Brady kids and Giselle were involved in this series? I was to a point, at least the kids. I just thought that was, you can't go there. Yeah, I'm surprised he even wanted their faces on television.
No, because I think, again, he's trying to show partly that he's a regular guy. He's trying to control that narrative that he's not, you know, he wants to show that he's not, quote, elitist, which is what the haters will say about him. So, no, I wasn't surprised. I thought it was an appropriate amount of everything in his life, his dedication to football, his training regimen, his relationship with his family. For those people, now this was in production prior to Giselle and the concussion comments and things like that.
Right.
But even more so, it helps. I ended up liking Giselle more after this
too.
Than I had
too.
Prior.
Oh, and that, how old are his kids now? I'm just.
He's got one that's like 13,
right.
And then maybe one that's like 8 and 4.
The only reason I'm saying that is I'm starting to think that these kids are going to want to be on social media. So I think he kind of wanted to introduce them now. I got to assume the 13-year-old, what, Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, you know, you got to, I mean, you're out in the public, whether you're even a child of a famous person or not. So, you know, they're going to be out there no matter what. Might as well put them in this. They're all going to be on those social media. You know, that's going to happen.
His oldest son is 9 now, I think.
When you go on social media, probably right around that time, don't you, with the Facebook?
It varies, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of stuff. I've seen kids all age, so he's going to have to be introduced to that. Do we want to go ahead and do?
Real quick, yep.
Let's go ahead and do the Valley Auction. So what's coming
up? The Valley Auction.
Well, I had to cut it short because I know we're running out of. You keep throwing up the break sign at
the CVA.
Yes. Totally. Champlain Valley Auction is back. And look, you can save up to 75% or more on local dining, shopping, entertainment, golf, overnight stays. Look, we've been to the Stoveflake. Jess and I went to the Stoveflake last auction. That was great. We've got a room in Montreal for another night because of the auction and all kinds of great places to eat. A $50 gift card to the Bluebird Barbecue with bidding starting at $20. Well, that's pretty darn good. ChampagneValleyAuction.com is the spot.
Go ahead and check it on out. So you'll love some of the stuff that we have on there. Brady, who is coming up next?
Jeff Shulman. He's the athletic director at UVM. We talk about the ending to the hoop season. What did he think about UMBC? And when's that new arena getting
built? Jeff Schulman next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow morning. And you thought the ESPN network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's The Huddle with Rich Arnie and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back here in The Huddle right here on a Wednesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Lots of loose ends to tie up on the UVM men's basketball season, but other news and notes going on around Catamount Country, so let's get all the answers on the TikTok Jewelers guest line now with University of Vermont Athletic Director, our buddy Jeff Schulman. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great, Brady. Nice to be on with you.
Yeah, I appreciate you joining us as always, and let's start with this. What was your raw reaction to seeing UMBC knock off Virginia and complete arguably the greatest upset in NCAA basketball history?
I probably like a lot of other folks. It was a combination of disbelief, pride for our conference. But I was just blown away by what they did. Not only, obviously the Virginia game, winning by 20 points, unbelievable. And then just they hung so tough with Kansas State. And I was just, it was amazing to watch, like the rest of the country. And, obviously, our season ending with a loss, heartbreaking loss to UMBC, added a little bit of a different twist to it. And that, our goal all along was to be in that tournament. So, part of us are thinking, boy, UMBC shouldn't even be there. But, of course, they were, and they earned it. And what they did was just incredible.
I think some of our fans, I imagine some of the players, at least privately, feel that way. But from your perspective as an administrator, what does that win do for the conference? Now what's the tangible results for that for the America East?
Well, there's a couple things. Obviously, and just in terms of raising the profile of our conference and specifically men's basketball in our conference, the attention that UMBC received was really significant, and people realizing that there's a lot of really high level basketball that's being played around the country, not only in the sort of higher profile conferences that you see on TV all the time. So, and for people, I think Vermont got a ton of mentions on the broadcast, and just the way that UMBC earned its spot in the NCAA tournament, and the fact that we had beaten them so handily two different times obviously says a lot about our program. There's certainly some benefits in terms of raising the profile of our conference. And then, there's a very real financial benefit that I know you've talked about on your show before, but the way the NCAA distributes revenue from the men's basketball television rights agreement, part of it is to conferences that earn units by winning games, by playing more games. So it ends up being about 200, right now the value of a unit is $270,000 per year that gets paid out six straight years. So do the math, $270,000, and that goes up every year. So it approaches $2 million of real financial benefit to the conference over a six-year period.
Jeff Schulman, UVM Athletic Director, with us now on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Let's tie up some loose ends on the UVM hoop season. Team plays in the NIT. They lose to Middle Tennessee State. You found out where you were going on Sunday. You played on Tuesday. Logistically, what was it like trying to get the travel arrangements and everything set up for the NIT?
Yeah, it's, it's never easy when you have to turn things around that quickly. We were kind of struggling with the NCAA's travel partner, a travel agency that we all work with for NCAA championship travel to get the team out of Burlington on a reasonable schedule. And it ended up Boston College was doing the same thing with shorts travel trying to get to Western Kentucky, and they were looking to fly into Nashville also. So we ended up getting together, and they gave us a charter to share. So we drove down to Manchester. They drove up to Manchester and chartered down together to Nashville. So that was kind of interesting to see some old friends from Boston College and have two teams traveling together to a postseason event. But it all worked out well, and we were able to get in and out of Nashville pretty easily. People read, I think, that the charter flight on the way home had a sort of minor incident on the runway, but it really wasn't anything that was serious. Most of the attention was just out of an abundance of precaution, which obviously made sense. But no, we were able to make it all work, and you know, it was tough for our guys. Obviously, as I said before, the ultimate goal for that group was to get to the NCAA tournament, and to lose it in such a heartbreaking manner was really tough. And I think it was hard on our guys to sort of turn around and play a very, very good Middle Tennessee team, you know, just a couple days later.
Jeff, as the season comes to a close for a lot of teams, the coaching carousel season really starts to spin. At what point do you have conversations with John Becker about his future in Burlington?
John and I talk all the time, and we're very, very upfront with each other about things. And so I feel like I know exactly where he stands, and he certainly knows where we stand. So it's you know, John is a very marketable coach, and we understand that. And but we've also worked really hard to make it this position one that he really feels good about. He's done an incredible job. You know, our program is as healthy as it could possibly be, and we'd love to see him continue as the leader of our program. But you know, I'm not naive about what else is out there, and the fact that John is on many schools' lists, and there's a lot of turnover every year, and there's a lot of dominoes from the initial turnover. So, you know, in terms of our communication, we're talking all the time about it. But I feel really good about what we've been able to do with the position, and I think John really appreciates what he has here, and a lot of it he's built himself. And as you know, and others know, we have big plans for facility improvements that hopefully will make this an even more attractive position.
Yeah, we'll get to the facility update in a second. Let's get another note on basketball. At what point, I know there's no hard, fast date, but at what point do we start to learn nuggets about next year's schedule? Usually that's kind of leaks out through the course of a summer, but when will we start hearing things?
Yeah, it's hard to, there's not a specific date where we say we're gonna release our schedule, but it's something that John and his staff are working on all the time. And as you and others know, it's been challenging for us to get non-conference games in Burlington, and that continues to be the case. I actually had a conversation with the Middle Tennessee Athletic Director when we were down there just about how challenging it is for strong mid-major programs to find good competition. And you know, we even said, you know, would we ever consider playing each other, and something that we're discussing. So it's hard for me to answer that question with a lot of specificity, but you know, as soon as we have information, we're not trying to hide anything for sure. If we have information to share about non-conference opponents coming to Burlington or us traveling, we'll certainly get that information out.
Jeff Shulman, Catamount Athletic Director, with us here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Let's transition off basketball now and kind of hit a number of other news and notes around the athletic department. The men's hockey team struggled this year, ninth in the playoff seeding in Hockey East. What do you do as an administrator to help the program keep ascending?
Well, you know, as I said with John, Kevin and I are talking all the time about, you know, where the program's at and how we can continue to advance things. And, you know, we knew we were going to be young this year, particularly on the blue line, and we were, and it showed, particularly in the early part of the season. I thought that we got better as the year went along, and I'm confident in what's returning that we're going to continue to improve. But we're always looking at ways that we can you know, stay competitive at a national level. You know, men's hockey is a program that we think can win a national championship, and that's ultimately our goal. And we're trying to do the things that we need to do to position that program to have that kind of success, while always maintaining, you know, what's our DNA around academic excellence and graduation rates and developing students as people and as leaders. So I'm confident in the direction that that we're going. You know, we're coming off of a stretch where we won 20 games, 3 out of 4 seasons. We were in the top 20, 3 out of 4 seasons. So, you know, it's obviously a very important program to us, and it's something that we're constantly looking at and working to improve.
Jeff, whether it was on the slopes, whether it was on the ice, there were multiple Olympians in Pyeongchang representing UVM. What was it like for you as an administrator to see so many Catamounts across a number of different sports?
Oh, it was really fun, and you know, behind each of them, there's a unique story, and you know, I've gotten to know many of them, and it was great. It was, you know, it's such a, you know, the Olympics are just such a unique event, and to have such strong representation from UVM was something that we're really proud of, and watching them compete and was fantastic. And obviously Amanda, you know, being a Vermonter and having her come to her state university and be so successful for us on the ice, and then knowing how hard she had to work to position herself. You know, she was not one of these players that was just a slam dunk to be on the national team. She really had to work hard and really transform herself to a large extent as a hockey player to get in position to make that team and to play the role that she did. And to see her, the gold medal around her neck, was just it was so satisfying. But overall, it was fantastic for the university. We had one of our students, Connor Wilson, who was the flag bearer for South Africa, was the only South African athlete that was competing at the games, and that's a student who's not even on our varsity ski team. I saw one interview with him. They asked him, what's your ultimate goal as an athlete? And he said, I'd love to make the UVM Alpine ski team, which I thought was very interesting. So it was great.
A lot of great stories out of the Olympics, Amanda Pelkey certainly being one of them. Jeff, we'll get you out of here on this. Where are we at kind of in the new facilities updated? We're looking at a new basketball arena, a fully renovated Gutterson Fieldhouse. Where are we at in the process?
So we, you know, you and I have been talking about this for a little over a year now, this sort of new concept that we came up with last October and presented to our trustees. So we've been hard at work with our design team, putting the final touches on the actual construction drawings and architectural plans for the project. We've just started the permitting process with the city of Burlington and the state of Vermont, and obviously we're out still raising money, but our ultimate goal is to have final approval of this project from our trustees by the fall, bid the job, and put a shovel in the ground by March of next year, so just about a year from now. It's probably about a 2-year construction project, so we're hoping to be up and running in the 2020-2021 academic year. So 2 more years in Patrick Gym as we know it, and the gut, and then moving into the renovated facilities, renovated Gutterson and the new event center for basketball and the health, wellness, and recreation facility for the general student body.
Jeff Shulman, UVM Athletic Director, always honest, always giving with his time. Jeff, we appreciate the updates, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thanks very much, Brady. Be well.
Good job getting all the information out there. You pretty much covered everything. I'm excited. They're further along on that new project, on the new stadium, than I thought, to be honest
with
you.
Yeah, I kind of hear that, and I go from I'll believe it when I see it, which is the way I've felt
for
the
last... Oh, it's past that now.
I've felt that for 40 years.
Yeah.
When the athletic director comes out and just basically says, we'll be, you know, the shovel will be in the ground, it's like, okay, that sounds like he means it.
Yeah. No, I thought it was very encouraging. Yeah. I mean, obviously... You do need the money. You need the approval on the plans from the trustees. But he is gung-ho about this, so I'm excited about it.
I'm going to have to call Jeff. There's only one thing I demand when they build this new court.
Your kid be on the hockey
team. No. There's two things. But one, you can't have a court, and I've seen this once or twice. I don't think it's only one or two schools, where the court, you have to step up to get onto the court. You know what I'm talking about, Brady?
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, that's horrible.
They do that at the Final Four.
They do it at the
They always do it. It's always in a huge football stadium somewhere.
Yeah, but
You know Phil of Vanderbilt, I believe, has
one
of those.
So
I
that
hate
the,
that.
So that the seats are actually underneath the court.
Yeah,
so you can
that.
Fall off.
Yes, I hate that court. Why do they do that? Why did they ever think that that was going to be good or something like that?
There's very few places that do that. But
there's
you're right.
A couple
when
of
they
them,
put
them
in those huge football stadiums for the Final
Horrible.
Four.
Horrible.
Yeah.
I hate that. And,
I think you're safe. That's
and don't
not
put a
happen.
Swimming pool underneath. Maryland's got a swimming pool. Well, that might not be too bad, though. Go and put a swimming pool out there. We go do a little swimming
in
between
games.
How about a
pool right in the middle of the basketball court?
Yeah, there you go. Brady, we're coming up at the top of the hour. You're going to have a SportsCenter update, and then we're going to get right to Buster Olney. We got a lot of baseball to get to, so all that's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow. The Huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, hour two of the show's lot to get to. We have the four-minute football fix coming up next segment. We'll have a spring training report. We got a good last story standing, so we'll have all that. Buster Olney is going to join us in mere minutes away, Rich. And by the way, did you get woken up a little earthquake this morning? Well, not like 9 hours ago. Like,
really?
Yeah, 2.7 earthquake.
2.7
in Malone, New York. So,
yes.
How far is that from us, though? 2.2
and a half hours.
Okay, so that's not that bad.
Yeah. How many? 60. Yeah,
oh,
but
60
that,
miles.
That darn body of water is in the way, so it takes a little longer.
I've been
to
in
get
so
there.
Many earthquakes, it's crazy. At least a dozen.
All I could think as I flew out to San Fran last week, or 2 weeks ago now, I guess it is just, please don't, not right now.
I was in one in Atlanta, and the people in Atlanta freaked out. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I had two co-hosts. We were like on the 12th or 14th floor or something like that. They wanted to leave.
Oh,
I'm like,
I
what
don't
is wrong
them.
With I go, what, if it's that bad and buildings are going to collapse— You don't want to be underneath the building. I mean,
where would you rather be? The 14th floor? Not me, man. I want to get the hell out of that building and run.
This is an earthquake where it just starts collapsing around. You know what I mean? They're like big buildings are not coming down to the ground.
I was on the Bay Bridge, and all I could think was that video during the World Series, that earthquake where where the top of the Bay Bridge, the car went right down into the lower level because it collapsed. I just kept waiting for it to happen.
Yeah, I've been in my fair share of earthquakes.
They sound horrible.
There's nothing you can do. I mean, it's
I
a little shaker,
that,
and then once it stops, you go back to normal stuff. What can you do out there? All right, let's go out to the TikTok jurors. Guess what? Joining us now from ESPN, as he does every week, it's Buster Olney. How you doing, Buster?
I'm doing great. Sitting in a dugout here in Fort Myers. It's nice and warm, and unfortunately, back home in New York, they're getting their fourth storm this month. So I'm the persona non grata in my house back in New York.
Brady's jealous. You know,
sitting in the dugout.
Let me start. Sox, Yankees, the London thing and all that. I want to ask you, have you been to different countries? How is it taken over there? How are the fans over there? You tell me.
They, the fans were tremendous. I was in Japan. And obviously, baseball is pretty well established there. I'm trying to think of different countries to go to in terms of baseball fans. I've been to London. I can't say that we necessarily have walking around and seen a bunch of caps from a particular team.
Yeah.
But I think, like we see in the NFL, it's going to be such an exclusive event. You're probably going to get a lot of people from the East Coast who are going to travel over to see it. Because it's might be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And my question was, when I saw it, I was just talking about it with some of the players here, who's giving up the home games?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have Yankees and the Red Sox, and I don't know the answer to that question, but, those are two pretty big games, pretty big draws at their home park. So it's interesting that they picked those two teams as opposed to, say, like Marlins and Athletics.
Yeah.
Well, would Marlins Athletics have worked over there?
Apparently they didn't think so. if you're going to have an event in London for the first time, you're going to want the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Buster, I've got two questions for you about some of the work that you've done recently this week. You on your podcast this week had David Ortiz on.
Yeah.
What did you learn from Big Poppy? What did he have to say?
A couple of things were interesting. You know, there's so much talk in right now about launch angle among young hitters where they're trying to jack the ball. And here you have David Ortiz, one of the great home run hitters, And I asked him, what do you think about it? He goes, I don't like it. And he talked about how not everybody is born to be a home run hitter. And that was, you know, that was interesting. I also, you know, found it interesting what he was saying about the Red Sox clubhouse, that Mookie Betts, you know, needs to be the guy with the current mix of players who's going to step up. And he also was absolutely very high on J.D. Martinez in Fenway Park. He said in some respects he's a perfect hitter for that place. You know, he drives the ball straight away center field, right center field. He said, you know, essentially he could hit the ball over the monster by accident. but he thinks he's going to be a tremendous addition.
Buster, also your work on Sunday Night Baseball is every week. Well, tomorrow you guys are having a dry run at Sunday Night Baseball. A-Rod's going to be down in Florida with you. You guys are doing a first broadcast with A-Rod.
Yeah, and I was just talking with Phil Hughes a few minutes ago, of course, who was Alex's teammate with the Yankees for so many years, and he was just saying, you know, he goes, that guy sees the game at a different level. And he said, it must have been exhausting to see that. And he told me about how, you know, he'd watch a pitcher for a few innings. He goes, watch the way that his thumb flexes in his hand. He's going to throw a curveball. And Phil said he would look at it six or seven pitches and be like, no, I still don't see it. And that's the sort of insight, you know, that Alex is going to bring. And I have been telling people, you know, I've always heard all these raves about how Alex watches the game, how he sees the game. And the comparison I made is Tony Romo, where, you know, and I hope he does that, where he's going to be in the box saying, curveball right here. He's going to throw a fastball. Look at it. Look at the flex on his thumb. And Phil was mentioning that probably some teams are going to listen to the broadcast and learn something about how their pitchers are tipping pitches.
You know, and I was about to ask if you could give him any advice. Is it just be yourself? Just be there what they hired you for? I mean, be like Tony Romo. Is that what you would say?
Well, and I'd also say, because this is, and I, Alex hasn't asked me the question, and I'm not going to tell him, give him advice until he actually asks for it. You know, I'm just a dopey writer. But the thing that I've always seen with former players is they're always afraid of offending people.
Right, right.
And in a lot of cases, and I, you know, some guys are, I think Jim Cotso, he's been a model for me, where I'm like, look, just say what the player is doing wrong in that moment. You don't have to condemn the guy. You can just say, hey, I think this guy, you know, he's struggling with a slider, and here's why. You know, his front foot's here. That's, you're not saying the guy's a bad person. And I think, you know, I'm sure Alex probably understands that without me telling him.
Now, you're in Fort Myers, so you've probably gotten to see this, although I think the Sox were on the road today against Tampa. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. And I know everybody's 0-0 next week. Does it matter that they're out there pounding the you-know-what out of the ball day after day and that they're winning every day?
You know, I get into these philosophical arguments with people every spring because you get a lot of people say spring results don't matter. I think they matter emotionally, like especially for individual players and individual teams. If you're a rookie, you're trying to make the team, you need a good spring training. If you're a guy coming back from an injury, you need good results. You need positive reinforcement. And I think with all the, I mean, let's face it, the Red Sox won the division last year, but so much of the conversation has generally been negative about their team. And the Yankees have made up a lot of ground, and the Red Sox don't score enough, and they don't hit enough home runs. And we've talked about this in the past. A lot of their guys last year didn't have sort of the typical year. So absolutely, I think it's a positive thing that they're killing the ball.
Buster Olney of ESPN, our MLB insider, joining us on the huddle as he does every week at this time. Buster, maybe I think I make too much of this stuff. I'm going to ask you. The Red Sox are likely, if Eduardo Rodriguez is healthy, to have four lefties in their rotation between Sale, Price, Pomeranz, and him. Does that matter to teams being too lefty-heavy in their rotation?
Well, there definitely are teams where you talk to players, you talk to staffs. You know, the Minnesota Twins, for example, for years had a lot of right-handers who didn't throw very hard. And in the end, you know, Terry Ryan, their general manager, said to me he thought that that became a disadvantage because every day it feels like you're seeing the same thing. The great thing for the Red Sox is, yeah, they've got different they've got a number of left-handers, but they're also different. There's nobody else like Chris Sale. So even if you face Chris Sale on a Monday, none of that information is going to be useful against David Price because they're so different with the mechanics and where they release the ball and what they throw, that I don't think it makes a difference.
Buster, let's kind of bounce around to a couple different topics, one of which, I don't know if anybody's really even aware of it, but I talked about it yesterday in my show. The major leagues is trying to keep the minor league players from making even minimum wage. How big a deal is this?
You know, I think it's, personally, as someone who covered the minor leagues for a couple of years, I wish that they would do something about that. The minor league salaries are, I don't want to use the word criminal, but they're embarrassing. That players, you know, human beings are asked to sort of, you know, exist on the amount of money they're, I mean, my goodness, there's, I can't think of any other job in this country where you're going to be making less than you would as a minor league baseball player. And I'm not saying that as a point of hyperbole. I literally can't think of another job. Like, if you were cleaning hotel rooms, if you were a you know, waiter, a waitress, you're going to make a lot more money than what minor league players make.
Wow.
And it's, you know, always sort of the interesting part of the union is the union, you know, historically such a great advocate for its players.
Yep.
But, man, if you are out of the union, they will bury you and they will trade you away. They certainly did that. They traded away the rights of amateur players in agreeing to that draft slotting system a few years ago. Bottom line is they protect their own. They're not out there looking for all ball players.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Buster Olney joining us on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. All right, let's have a little fun. Jamarcus Russell called me. He said, man, Ohtani's overrated. That's Jamarcus Russell saying that. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, Buster. We haven't even started and the pressure's getting to him.
Well, and there's certainly a lot of that, and people are asking questions about him. A few things I'd caution you to remember.
Yes.
One is the guy's talent is ridiculous. You know, I was exchanging direct messages on Twitter the other day with Mike Trout, and he was telling me, I'm like, what do you see in the guy? And he goes, just crazy power. And he talked about how in batting practice, and you're seeing him hit the ball as far as he does, and he said, you have to remind yourself he also throws 100 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And that's what the Angels have been talking about internally. You know, there's some discussion last week because Billy Epler, their general manager, didn't give an assurance to reporters that
yes.
it's going to be in the opening day roster.
Yes.
Guys, I bet the family farm back in Randolph Center, he will be on the opening day roster. And he will get the ball in either the third or fourth game of the season. They absolutely believe in his talent. And the scout said to me the other day, the 2 months where you cannot pay attention to results are September and March. And Ohtani is a incredible tool chest of talent, and they're betting that eventually it translates.
As for the Yankees, Jacoby Ellsbury goes to the DL to start the season. I mean, that almost sounds too convenient to me.
Well, there's no question it solves the problem, right?
Yeah.
But he's been sick, and he has been hurt. He's been hurt quite a bit during the course of his career. He actually is scheduled to play here against the Twins in our game tomorrow, our broadcast. But let's face it, he's sort of a man without an island right now. The problem is that, you know, he's owed $68 million. It's still a lot of money for them to eat. And I suspect, unless he would go to them and say, look, I'll agree to whatever trade you make, he probably is not going to play a lot because, to your point, they have three spots in the outfield, and they have four starters, including Giancarlo Stanton, who's going to serve as DH quite a bit, and then there's Ellsbury. If Ellsbury's going to play, it's only because a couple of guys get hurt.
Stanton and J.D. Martinez are popular choices to this next answer, Buster, but somebody different. Who's a new face in a new place that you think is prime for a big year?
Oh, boy. Can I go old face in an old place that's prime for a huge year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Manny Machado of the Orioles. If you guys are drafting fantasy, I would say grab him. The other day, Eric Carabel, who's the ESPN fantasy expert, had him ninth in baseball, and I wrote a column today basically saying, no, that's too low. Like, he's going to have an off-the-chart season. You know, one player said to me this spring that he thinks that Manny has more pure talent than Mike Trout does. But the question with Manny is focus on a day-to-day basis. Last year, he had a .268 on base percentage in road games and had evaluators say, look, the guy just doesn't really kind of lock it in. Well, the Orioles, recognizing this, moved him to shortstop where he's into every pitch because he has to, you know, maintain focus and what's the pitch call, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's a free agent at the end of the year, and he's killing the ball. He's got an OPS of about 1,400, you know, and that going back to the question of spring training results. Some players, I don't think it matters. I think for Manny Machado, as they launch into his free agent season, that's a guy who I think is going to have a huge year. And he's probably going to play the last 2 months with a team other than the Orioles. They're likely to deal him in midseason.
Buster Olney, ESPN with us. Buster, I usually ask you a Mariners question for me. Today I take one for my dad. My dad's a diehard White Sox fan. Tell me, of all the teams tanking and rebuilding, they're the next team that's going to make some noise. It might not be this year, but tell me they're the Astros coming soon.
You know, I could definitely see that. Your dad should be very optimistic.
He's not.
You know? I guess it's kind of like, you know, Red Sox fans are reflexively cynical. I think that White Sox fans probably are at this point, but they should be optimistic because they do have a ton of talent. And everybody who talks about the moves they made the last 2 years talks about what a great job Rick Hahn did in restructuring that roster. And look, you know, this year the Indians, I picked them to win the World Series, but it may well be the last year of their window. The Twins, who I'm, you know, was here with today, I think that they'll be a good team in the next couple of years. The other two teams, the Tigers and Royals, may not be good for a while. So your dad's going to have some fun as a White Sox fan the next few years.
You know, Buster, I took credit in your article about stolen bases. So I have another great idea for you.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Listen to this. I think you should do an article, and I'm serious, that baseball records that will be broken, that won't be broken, that may be broken. You know, like the Johnny Vandermeer back-to-back no-hitters or the Hack Wilson or the Cal Ripken Jr., stuff like that, you know?
That's a good one, but now, see, I can't write it for at least 5 years until the statute of limitation runs out, so you're not taking credit for it.
Oh, I'll take credit no matter what. Every article you'll come out with, no, I'll just go ahead and take credit.
Ghostwriter.
Hey, always a pleasure, Buster. Enjoy, and we're looking forward to opening day. We'll speak to you next week.
Likewise. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, okay. Buster.
Buster only, everybody, joining us on the TikTok Jewelers.
The luckiest human on earth. Yeah. He's sitting in the dugout. Of course, there's no game. I was just looking. I was like, oh, which game is he watching? There's no game going on right now.
He's getting ready for the Twins. I think it's
tonight.
Yeah. The thing, see, you took that to be the best part. I was just exchanging direct messages with Mike Trout. I thought that was the best part.
I was listening to that part. By the way, I don't know if you found my Jamarcus Russell joke too funny. He's very Ohtani sensitive. You know that.
No, it's just because you are so ridiculous.
No, it is. He's batting 0.83 before going into yesterday.
There's one for 10 or something.
Two for 24.
So. There's a difference. Yes, he is struggling. Yes, he is playing bad. But here's what you don't understand about this guy. Okay, Ohtani is making no money. He is making league minimum
now. No, I understand.
So, you know what? I know that the hype is very real.
Yes, this is not about the money. But
if he comes out and just say he hits 220 this year and has an ERA of 5, we would say that's a big disappointment for the hype.
Yes.
But the money, it's not like he's getting paid what Dice K was getting paid.
If he was getting $5 an hour, I would still make a big deal about it. It's not about the money with him. I know with the other athletes it is. Not with him. It's more about, you know, that he was Babe Ruth.
And you were saying, oh, I got to take Lonzo. I can't be wrong. Don't forget that. You were saying the Celtics had to take Lonzo.
I was right on that.
But you said, I can't be wrong on Lonzo.
No.
You have to take Ohtani.
I was right about Lonzo, because if you took Markelle Fultz, look at the position you'd be in right now. Oh, geez, the guy can't shoot. The guy can't play basketball.
Right, but I'm just saying, you're like, well, I was saying if I were the Celtics, I would have taken Tatum number one, given what their needs were, even at the time, because they had Isaiah.
You're right about that. I mean, he certainly turned – you know what? I would say Tatum is better than Lonzo right now. I don't know if he'll be better when their careers are done. To be honest with you, but I still see an upside for Lonzo that people could start to
see. Different in the fact that Lonzo's going to be the centerpiece of that team, unless LeBron comes. LeBron goes to Los Angeles, then that's going to severely limit Lonzo for at least a few years.
Yeah, I was going to say a couple years, but
Hayward's there long term, and you've got to think Kyrie's going to be in Boston long term. Tatum is not going to have the ability to put up the crazy numbers that Lonzo's going to have.
Yes, no, you're 100% right on that. I agree with you there. But I just, this whole Ohtani thing started eons ago, okay? So the whole Babe
Ruth. You didn't even know who Ohtani was until December.
But once the Babe Ruth started and all that, I'm like, okay. And you know, I've been rooting against him. So.
And you were talking about the two Yankees on the cover of SI this week. Well, on the West Coast edition, there he is, Shea Ohtani the cover with Mike Trout. Yeah, there's two different covers this week on SI.
You got to put up something. I just didn't think it was going to be that. I mean, I always had doubt. When you come, always as Ichiro was able to come over here and do it, you know, put up numbers like that. I haven't seen too many people do that, though.
I mean, not hitters, anyway.
And remember this, though. This guy's coming over. I mean, look, Mike Trout, at age 19, he came up for the end of a season.
Right.
He got 135 plate appearances and hit 220. He might end up being the best baseball player all around that ever lived.
Oh, there's a lot of Dan Marino, his first year.
Troy Aikman. Eli.
Troy Aikman was like 1-15.
Yeah.
I mean, he was horrible. But again, we'll see what he does. He's 2-for-24. At least he was going in the yesterday or today. I don't know what
he wanted
today.
To send Dustin Pedroia back to Pawtucket. He was hitting about 130 at the All-Star break.
His ERA is like 27.
Well, that's not helping him. That's just one awful first inning.
He's had a few bad first innings or a few bad outings of what it was there. All right, Brady, what is coming up? I'm going to let you only do a half a show today. You're very cranky. You need to play some hoop and get some exercise in. So you're looking very pale. So what's coming up on the half a show on Champaign Valley Game Night?
We'll talk with Maggie DeMasi, the sister of Lou DeMasi, who we've had on the show before.
Another DeMasi.
Lou doesn't call me at all to play hockey anymore.
Let me guess. We're going to talk about hockey.
Lou, yeah,
last name like that.
Let's play some basketball.
Maggie DeMasi, she was the assistant coach at Norwich when they won the national championship this weekend on the women's side. She's also the assistant coach of the St. Mike's men's team. So how does she do both?
I don't think Lou likes me anymore. He doesn't call me. We don't play basketball. What's up
with that,
Rich?
He ever liked you.
That's true. A lot of people don't
does
like
anybody
me.
Like
Lou, where are you? All right, we'll have that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
No, that's not next. That's on Champlain Valley Game Night.
Oh, that's Champlain Game Night. Okay, see, I screwed that up. What is coming up next? How about that?
The four-minute football fix.
See, I was thinking of Lou playing basketball.
Apparently you haven't taken enough showers
today. Oh, my goodness. I'm so frustrated about that. But we'll get to the four-minute football fix. That's coming up next right here on 101.3.
I miss football. You miss football. We all miss football. So let's talk some football. Training camp may be a ways away, but we'll help you through the wait. This is your 4-minute football fix on the Huddle 101.3 ESPN. Let's go.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Let's get right to the four-minute football fix.
Let's go.
I rushed them.
Yeah,
rushed
you were
them.
Trying to catch me
I was trying to
catch
you off guard.
Now, we have two different segments here. Are they each 4 minutes or 8 minutes football fix?
This will end up being about 8 minutes of football.
Can you back up to what we missed at the 4:55 segment about Sam Darnold throwing today at the
your man crush?
Would you like to?
Well, he was throwing in like it wasn't.
It was
pouring.
Driving rainstorm.
But when he was throwing, it wasn't like coming down like it is later on. They're having a terrible rainstorm out there, but he looked phenomenal. He just solidified. He's going to be the number one pick, though. I was watching Joel Klatt on with Colin Cowherd, who had Rosen down at number 8. And I'm like, you're kidding me now if you think Baker Mayfield is going that high. So I still think it's going to be Darnold and Rosen, but Darnold solidified going to
the you think Rosen's going to the Giants at 2?
I think he'll be picked at number 2. That doesn't mean it'll have to be by the Giants. I think the Giants are going to trade out of the pick, and if they don't, think they're going to take a quarterback. I don't think they're going to go ahead and take Barkley the number 2 pick.
Well, let's talk about Barkley, because Saquon Barkley was supposed to have his pro day today. Penn State had their pro day. Saquon Barkley did not participate.
Yes.
He backs out of the pro day.
Well, at first I thought he just didn't want to run, and then later on backed out. I don't know if he did it all at the same time. I don't know what's going on
there. He said that he didn't want to do it. He said he's over running in shorts, and no team sent running back coaches, so basically he felt it was pointless. Is this a bad look for the potential number 1 pick in the draft?
Nobody shows up.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Not really.
Head coaches were there. Team.
Oh, okay.
Head coaches are there. Team executives are there, but no running back coaches were there. And so because it wasn't his position, I don't know if he felt other people couldn't adequately judge him.
I don't think it should affect him, because we've seen quarterbacks that don't want to throw, all right? That say, I'm just not going to participate, or,
It usually goes the other way. They don't participate in the combine.
That's okay.
And they throw in the pro day.
That's
this
what
is
I meant.
This is a rather new one. The guy who did the combine, Barkley, was at the combine, and now has backed out of it, he backed out of the pro day. We usually don't see that.
Well, what don't you know already about this guy? If he did it, combine, he's done it on the field. If you still need more, then you've not done your homework.
Yeah, but
I'm
having all these coaches are coming to Penn State. I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do. I mean, Barkley's one of those guys, and there's a couple of them this year, but it seems like him more than any other. I've heard 1, I've heard 2, I've heard 3, I've heard all the way up to 10 with this guy as far as where he's going.
But when you're
in the
a top
draft.
5 pick, you don't have to do that.
If you're somewhere between 1 and 10, we're talking about millions of dollars difference. If coaches are showing up at State College and saying, I want to watch you run, or I want to watch you do this and that, damn well you do it.
If he slips, if he just doesn't feel right, if he feels bloated because he had a big breakfast and runs a tenth slower, oh my goodness, the news is, oh, did you see what he ran? He's not that fast, blah, blah, blah. That, I mean, it's not worth it. It really, he's going to be top
five. Don't eat a big breakfast. Really?
Look, I want to sit here and crush him. I want to say that it's a bad look. I want to say that I disagree with it, and I think it's, you know, weak of him to not do it. But we, as you alluded to, we excuse Sam Darnold for not throwing at the combine because we said, when you're the number one pick of the draft, you have all the leverage. You don't have to do that. Barkley's the clear number one running back. He's arguably the number one player, even though he might not get drafted number one. These teams know what he is already. He's been at the combine. He's done the interviews. They've got the game tape. The only thing that I question about this is that he said his combine numbers were not as good as he would have liked. So he came out and said, my combine numbers, look, he ran a 4.440. He says he can run a legit 4.3.
Right.
Well, now, so you talk about
a tenth of a second.
Yeah, so you say, what if he
ran a 4.5?
I think he's saying his bad day was the combine. I would have liked to see the good day now. I don't think he's going to fall under those numbers. I want to see the good day now.
You never know when you have that one slip, the one bad start. Bad start, you run a 4.5, then people are really going to question
you. And if you're a coach, do you wonder where his head's at? How confident is this guy when he says, well, I ran this, it was a pretty, I mean, his own coach called it very average by his standards as what he saw at Penn State. But, I mean, where's his head at if he thinks, well, I don't want to take the chance that I'm going to be even slower in front of the coaches.
I don't care about 4.3 to 4.4. That means so little to me, I don't understand. You see, that's why there's so many busts in the draft, because people care how many reps you're putting up or how high you jump or what your 40 time is. I think that's ridiculous.
I think teams have their opinion about him already. I don't think this is going to change. I don't love that he's not at his pro day, but mainly just because I think it's so atypical. Again, usually people skip out on the combine, they give themselves another 2.5-3 weeks to train, and then they go and do it in the comfort of their own workout facilities and with their own coaching staff present, with their own teammates present. It's very rare we see the guy who's willing to go to the combine and do everything and not willing to do it at the pro day. I don't love it, but I also can't really give you a reason why, other just than that it's different.
I don't think he's going to be taken number or second.
Because you think the Giants are going to trade.
I think the Giants.
Buffalo.
Buffalo has been my pick all along. But if in case they don't, and the Giants do have to use that second pick, I still think they're going to take Josh Rosen. I don't see Josh Rosen dropping down to number 10 where they said, Arizona, Chicago trades up to get him.
Chicago. They got Trubisky.
Right, but trade from Chicago. Is Chicago at the number 10 pick? Is that what it is? And then Arizona? But they say Arizona, whatever the trade is.
Yeah, the Giants.
They said Arizona was getting them. I don't buy that for it all.
Giants are in a tricky spot, because how many years has Eli got left? I mean, three?
Two?
Two?
That's
a little bit of a tightrope to walk as to what you want to do for your future, especially when you have the number 2 pick. Do you get a quarterback who's going to sit there for 2 or 3 years?
I think you take the quarterback. If they don't take the quarterback, then I think you make the trade, and Buffalo would be on my speed dial. The only two teams that really need a quarterback of the future terribly that aren't already high are Arizona and Buffalo. Buffalo's got 12-22 or something like that. They've got, they need a quarterback, but, I mean, Denver's already at number 5. If they want to take a quarterback to succeed Case Keenum, they're already in a position to get one of the quarterbacks. Cleveland's in position to get quarterbacks. Arizona and Buffalo are the only teams that really need one that would be willing, I think, to trade up that high.
Is it simple as Giants take the 12 and 25 or whatever you said from Buffalo for the two?
If
the Giants do that?
If the Jets are getting a first and 3 seconds from Indy.
I would take that too.
If Indy's getting that much just to go up 3 spots, the Giants better be getting a heck of a lot more than just 2 firsts. For what's the number 2 pick in the draft.
By the way, just a little side note, the Carolina Panthers, the bidding is up now up to $2.5 billion.
Damn! Mine was 2.4.
There goes that plan.
I'm willing to see who's Fanatics owner Michael Rubin is willing to go higher than his initial bid, but he doesn't want to go that high. It's only valued at $2.3 billion, but that doesn't mean you're not going to make your money anytime over. By the way, I thought there was a chance that it would not stay in the Carolinas. if somebody else wanted to buy it and move it. I'm not so sure that could happen.
I don't know who's going to still be around athletically in Charlotte in 10 years. It's, I mean, they keep talking about the basketball team in trouble, even with Michael Jordan running the show. And
that's a lot of money, though. The Dodgers sold
NFL,
for
man.
The Dodgers sold for $2 billion.
Yeah.
And what did the Clippers sell for with Bummer? Was that $2 billion also? Because he overpaid for that. That's turned...
Well, wow, LA basketball, you know, that, it's not cheap.
I got to tell you, that's a bargain for an NFL franchise, $2.3 billion. When the Dodgers sold for $2 billion and the Clippers sold for $2 billion, and I know that's LA, but still, that's a bargain.
Even the Marlins sold for, you know, $1.3 or whatever.
Yeah, that I would say, hey, get in on that. That's some good cheap money.
Well, maybe
there.
If we pool our resources, we're getting paid next week.
Yeah, where's
week?
Peyton Manning? Or buy that team, Peyton.
Well, Peyton just sold 20 Papa John's franchises or whatever, so he's loaded.
What is his worth? What the hell is his worth after those Papa John's?
Maybe that's why he was number 3 on the ESPN list.
Yeah, it could be.
Hey,
yeah.
Real quick, I did want to get to this. West Coast NFL teams, not
yes.
all of them, but
saw
some
this.
Of them.
Yeah.
The 49ers, the Cardinals, and the Chargers, I think, are the teams leading the charge. They are petitioning a rule change with the NFL that says that they will not have – that they don't want to play more than 3 games – that are 1 p.m. East Coast kickoff
right.
times.
I would say, you know, before you act on that, think of the consequences. Yes, if you play at 1 o'clock Eastern, that's 10 o'clock in your body clock, and you got to get up early. I would deal with that before you're going to tell me that I got to go back to New York and play a 4 o'clock game when it's really cold out. And I think I'd like to get that started like 3 hours earlier when maybe it's 20 degrees warmer. So I think I'll deal with the lack of sleep before I deal with 20 or 30 degree difference in the weather.
I'll tell you, it was as if it wasn't weird enough out in Arizona last week with the time change, with daylight savings, and they don't do the time change.
Yeah.
They just switch time zones. So as if that wasn't weird enough, the time stayed the same. They just became Pacific time. But I understand the weirdness out there for them. Their body clock says it's time to kick off at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Right, but, you know, they get out there early. Do you want the bad weather, though? You want that 4 o'clock when it's, like, 2 degrees outside instead of, like, maybe 20 or something?
I think you're making
too much
of a deal
of
that.
Yeah,
because,
really?
Because a lot of December, when what you're talking about would apply, a lot of that is divisional games.
Yeah,
divisional
okay.
games. So you're not getting, you know, you wouldn't get the Chargers going to Buffalo and then Miami, you know, or Buffalo and New England back-to-back weeks. You're at the most, you'd only end up with one of those possible trips because you'd end up with a home game, then you'd end up with a division game, which is going to likely be in your time zone. Look, the West Coast teams get screwed when it comes to the travel. I could see this working, but I also don't know how often this really would apply because it's only for Sunday games because, you know, Monday night, they're not asking for any change. They're not asking for a change on Thursday night, and they're not asking for a change on Saturday if they were going to play a Saturday game late this season.
Yeah.
So how many – when you take out those things,
maybe
how many other games do you really end up – I remember the Seahawks came out this year and played the Giants, and I don't remember them coming – and they played in Jacksonville, but that game ended up getting – the other reason you can't do it is because of the flex scheduling. The NFL wants to keep the ability to change your time slot later in the season, so I don't know that you can – I like it, but I don't know that you can find a way to do it.
By the way, two comments on the Tom Fairytire text line about some football. Aaron in Bridgeport said, I think it's more about the injury risk to Saquon Barkley than it is to anything else out there. And, of course, one person agrees with me. I agree with Arnie. Everybody needs to hype up the draft. So if Barkley turns a 4-5, that would make world news tonight. And, he's right. You would lose millions of dollars.
You're right. We need to hype up the NFL draft more than we do.
No, not hype up it. You know,
but I heard an ad over the weekend saying, only 38 more days. I thought, what? Oh, the draft.
Rich hates the draft.
I
hate it.
I hate spring training.
You know why Rich hates the draft?
Why?
And it's so arrogant because he's like, I'm a Patriot fan. We don't need the draft.
No.
We're so good. We don't need the draft.
No, it's because the day means absolutely nothing.
Wow.
If you don't spend 8 weeks talking about every possibility, I have no problem with it. Talk about it for 8 days.
Brady, tell us about the Champlain Valley Auction. It is back. All kinds of great deals. I know people are bidding on the Bluebird Barbecue, a $50 gift card for only $20. You can get that right
really?
Now. Oh, yeah, get that right now.
50 for 20. I'll take that.
Champlainvalleyauction.com. You can save up to 75% on all kinds of different experiences. You want to play golf at Stowe Country Club? You can do that at a heavily discounted price. Same thing at Sugarbush. You can ski for much cheaper rates here as the season comes to an end. You can use it for next year also and get the jump on your 2018-19 ski season. ChamplainValleyAuction.com. Save big on a lot of premium items, Rich.
All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, daily spring training update, and we'll round out the show.
And we got to get some Kyrie stuff in, so we'll get that all. And then, of course, last story standing later on. We got a lot to get to right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The commercials are over, and the guys are back. The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. Cruising along. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Brady, let's get to Kyrie. What's the latest on him? Because I guess it's good news then, right, about Kyrie?
Yeah, good news for Kyrie. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, he gave the update late yesterday.
The one thing that hasn't changed with this Kyrie Irving injury, I'm told, is that there's no structural damage to that sore left knee, and that they still believe in Boston that the best remedy to get him better and back will be rest. And that gives them, some good feeling with the Celtics that they're going to have, you know, one of the premier playmakers back by the time they get to the postseason and really have to ramp it up again.
I pretty much shut him down the rest of the year. I don't know if he'd be a little rusty coming back for the start of the playoffs, but you really have no choice. You're going to lose in the first round, then it wasn't meant to be anyway. So I'd shut him down for the rest of the year and try to bring him back and then make a run if that's what he needs rest.
I stopped running marathons 4 years ago, and my knees have gone to hell since. So I'm not really a big fan of rest. But
he needs it.
But look, I'm watching that. I mean, that was just an unbelievable finish last night, but it just felt like there was a cloud over the whole thing right now. It just feels like no matter what they do, are they going to be in any position whatsoever to even get into the second round?
No. See, though, I felt the opposite yesterday. Really? Generally, I'm the doom and gloom guy, but I wasn't yesterday because I thought that, look, this was a day full of bad news, a day about Kyrie's knee in which I went into the game expecting the worst. I went expecting nothing. Hey, Kyrie's not playing. Brown's not playing. Westbrook's in town. They're going to get beat by 20. Yeah. And they came back and won. So it took my doom and gloom attitude and turned it on its head. This is good news for this year for Kyrie and for your chance to try to, you know, get to an NBA Finals and maybe pull an upset and win it. But long term, Arnie, I'm just wondering, because you were so good with trading Isaiah Thomas. You did not want him long term. And you said, well,
boy, could you imagine that they kept him?
Yeah, I'm just saying though, you said, get rid of Isaiah. He's older and now his hip is bad. But now you've got Kyrie with bulky knees at 25 years old.
Big difference between Kyrie and Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, but are you leery of giving Kyrie Irving a max deal here? Because he's going to be a free agent after next season. He's probably going to need a procedure this offseason no matter what he does the rest of the year. Are you leery of giving him a five-year max deal?
I'm leery, but I have to do it. Yes, I am leery, but that doesn't mean anything. I have no choice.
So you're going to give Kyrie a five-year, $140 million deal?
Exactly what I'm going
to
do.
I wanted to give Isaiah, before we knew about the hip, I wanted to give him a three-year $100 million
deal. Didn't think he was good enough, though. Didn't think he was good enough, and obviously he's not good enough, as we've seen, but I didn't think he was good enough. Plus, you know, he did have that injury. And just overall, though, I'd rather give Kyrie the 5 year. How much did you say? 140.
Probably like 125, 130. I think.
You have no choice. You have no choice. And by the way, that's what the big stars are getting when you talk about.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who has to have good knees. Everything about Kyrie's game is quickness.
It's not as bad as you think.
It's all quickness with him.
It's not as as we hear. There's no structural damage, but I mean, how much do we know? I'm not a doctor. Stayed at Holiday Inn Express last night, but that doesn't mean it's not going to wear down. He's 25 years old. He's not going to play past 32 or 33. I promise you that.
You're right. He's going to have to. You're going to have to do it. But every time we heard that he needed surgery last offseason and didn't get it done. And part of his threat out of Cleveland was trade me, or I'm going to have this surgery and I'm not going to play for X amount of time. You're right. You're going to have to do it. But this could end up being very bad for the Celtics in the long run.
What if he goes and gets a second opinion? The doctor says, look, you need to get surgery. You have to do it and be ready for next year. Do you get it done sooner than later? And I'm talking about next week as opposed to At the end of the season, no, whenever probably wait that to, is for
if,
him?
If he has to, if he could wait till the end of the season, I'd probably do that.
Okay, not, but then you potentially miss a lot of next year. I'll tell you, you
no,
get
no,
him
not
back
if you do it in the
ready.
Offseason. If you're going to miss stuff, then it's really more serious than we thought. You know what I mean? You're not going to – you got it in the offseason. You'll be able to make it back.
I just – I look at possibly as a Celtics fan, we've been very patient, and I know they've incrementally gotten better and better every single year since Brad Stevens arrived, but I think they might have to be one more year of this patience. I would love to see Kyrie come back with fresh legs. Gordon Hayward
come
back
completely
healthy.
He's never going to be fresh. It's always going to be like this. It's always.
But do you feel like with the way things are that Kyrie can win them a championship or even get him to the Eastern Conference Finals in his current condition?
No.
So then why not get him under the knife? Or is it not going to make enough difference to you?
Rich, would you like to hear this bad news also real quick? Not to divert our attention.
Yeah.
Well, it's more funny now, but I'd still be mad about it if I were a Thunder fan. The NBA's two-minute report determined that Marcus Morris should have been called for a five-second violation and a travel prior to his game-winning three-pointer yesterday.
I didn't see the travel.
Nice. Well, that makes up for the Marchand non-call the night before.
Who was standing
Boston
at the top
Sports
of the
fans?
Key that they didn't want to give him the ball because it was like he had contagious leprosy, and they didn't want to give. Who was that? Wide open too? God forbid you should give him the ball to shoot the three-pointer.
And how open was Westbrook for that final shot? What they had 1.7 or something to get the ball in? He's got a wide open
with
jumper.
Like 20 seconds left. Literally, I turned it off and went to shower. And I only took one shower yesterday.
You watch the whole game and you wait 20 seconds? You can't watch the last 20 seconds of it?
Well, I was like, it's over.
Well, Rozier hit that. I mean, that three that Rozier hit was unbelievable. So, yes. And then, obviously, Melo being Melo, choking away the game as he often
has. How do
you
miss two foul shots? You should be ashamed of yourself. Yeah. You should be cut immediately.
I'm guessing he doesn't care.
Why would you say he doesn't care?
I think that's been part of his problem his whole career. No, I don't think it's important enough to him. Right. Look at the teams he's played for. All they do is lose.
Who, to Carmelo?
Yeah.
Oh, don't stop bagging
on
Carmelo. Quit joining the national media making Carmelo the punching
bag. National
media?
What national media? That's
my opinion.
I'm
national
media.
It's
Colin and Arnie who hate Melo.
No, I like Carmelo. I'm a Melo fan.
Colin hates Melo.
Yeah,
all he does is lose everywhere he goes.
Just like you make your living trolling the Patriots, Colin makes his living trolling Melo.
Right.
And I love Colin, but that's one thing I disagree with him on.
Good last story standing. It's about Deion Sanders. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, last story standing has to do with Deion Sanders, who put out a list of his top 8 or 10 corners and safeties out there or something like that. He gets a tweet that says, hey, how did you make this statement? How do you include a list where you don't have your two first-team all-pro, AP all-pro safeties?
Was Earl Thomas on the list then?
I don't know. I don't have the list in front of me. Okay. Yeah, no, he's not on the list.
And
no, but,
Kevin Byard is the one who got mad from Tennessee.
I didn't do that yet because Deion wrote back, look, you're looking at whose writers are telling you who's the best. I know who the best players are. And I know I'm a former player. I rest my case. You continue being a fan, and I'll continue being the man, is what he wrote. But he didn't know the guy that sent it is a player in the NFL. And he says, if you didn't know, I'm a current player who watches a lot of films, so trust me. I know who's balling and who is not, talking about being a fan. And who was it, Brady?
It was Kevin Byard of the Tennessee Titans.
Who led the league, I think.
Eight or nine interceptions.
And
did Deion have any response to this?
No, of course not.
He suddenly shut up for the first time in
his life. How do you not know who he is if you're making a list? You know what I'm saying? You know who the hell it is? Brady, you playing ball tonight or
I'm
what?
I'm playing ball.
All right. Wow. Finally, look at that. He's not afraid. Usually backs down. Just because you're playing ball, just only do a half a show today.
Thanks.
I'm going to let you
appreciate
off on that.
It.
For intern.
Nathan.
And for intern.
That's it.
That's it. For Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.